And welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 185. 185. I've never had 185 of anything. Now I have 185 podcast episodes. The Nerdist YouTube channel is launching soon. Please go to youtube.com/Nerdist. Click subscribe so we can continue to make programming that will be suitable for your brain. Neil Patrick Harris, Rob Zombie, Weird Al Yankovic, me, Allison Hayslip, Alex Albrecht, Awkward Family. Tons of stuff that I believe will make your brain happy. So that's all launching April 2nd. All you have to do is click subscribe to support the channel, and we appreciate it. And our side of the bargain is that we will do our best to make stuff that you'll enjoy. I would like to thank Stamps.com, a returning sponsor to the Nerdist Podcast. Let's say you want to start a business in your home because you don't want to buy office space. That is an excellent plan. Stamps.com can give you a professional-seeming operation. When you mail people stuff, you can print out the exact postage that you need. You can do it from any computer in the world. All you need is a Stamps.com account. You plug it in, you weigh your letter or package on the digital scale that they're going to send you, and that's it. Stamps.com is like having a postal expert right at your desk. There's no guesswork. You don't even have to go to the post office. It is that simple. How many things in life are that simple? There are not many, but Stamps.com makes it easy. And right now, Stamps.com has a special offer for Nerdist listeners. Use the promo code Nerdist. You're going to get a no-risk trial, $110 bonus offer, including the digital scale I mentioned before, and $55 of free postage. That should last you quite a while, unless you're mailing heavy things. Well, I don't know you, so I don't know what you're going to mail. But still, this is a good way to go about that, so don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click the old radio microphone at the top of the homepage, and then type in Nerdist. That is Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist. Thank you, Stamps.com, for continuing support the Nerdist Podcast. And now, the Nerdist Podcast number 185 with Tom Papa.
I think I just sounded more like a radio DJ than I ever have in my entire life, and I used to work as a radio DJ.
Oh, Nerdist Podcast number 185. After that, we're going to go out of traffic. Hey, I'll be at Peppers and Irvine giving away keychains this weekend.
Side note, I'm not actually going to be at Peppers and Irvine. I don't know if there is a Peppers and Irvine, so here's Tom Papa.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Here we go.
Oh, I like that.
Is that HP? They had that one commercial where it was...
I want to smoke a pipe.
Tom Papa.
Doesn't that look cool?
Tom Papa.
Chris Hardwick.
It works with all our names.
Jonah Ray.
Oh. That's more NBC.
Matt Myra. Jonah Ray, proud as a peacock.
Jonah Ray.
Can we please just do this for the rest of the time?
It's not TV. It's Matt Myra.
Oh. Ooh.
You're not TV.
No, thankfully.
Yeah. But Tom Papa.
I would be a mess.
Tom Papa, you are TV.
I am TV.
Welcome to the podcast, Tom Papa. What brings an East Coaster like yourself west to our warm California shores?
Hollywood. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun. Oh, I don't know that one.
Weirdo thinks he's going to make it out here.
Yeah, Dork thinks he's going to drown.
I hear there's movies and stuff to be made out here.
You don't want it, kid. It's the studio system.
Yeah. Shut up. If he wants it, let's bring him in. Start
Who's
sucking.
Got the opium? I'm just trying to stay within the time.
I'm under a 30-year contract with Warner Brothers.
This Coca-Cola has cocaine in it.
Yeah. It'll keep me going all night. Thanks, Mr. Warner. It's really great to be here.
The rabbit thinks she's gold, but she's poison. Eddie Valiant. That's wow. My Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Yeah.
Very strong.
Yeah, thank you.
But, yeah, well, I lived here for, like, 6 years. I still have my house here.
And, what?
Yeah.
Are you some kind of crazy millionaire with East and West Coast residences? Do you have a house in every state?
I'm very successful. I thought that.
I knew that you were, but I didn't know you were bi-coastal successful. That's a whole other stratum.
Well, to tell you the truth.
I sent you my bank account. That's why you asked me to be on the podcast.
To tell you the truth, it's unsustainable. And
I mean, to be on this podcast, we have to run your credit report. We have to check with Experian and TransUnion. And,
wow. That's why I tried to get in here before the year end, because if I don't get something going pronto, Tom, one of those places going down the tube.
We want to have you on in the first quarter, but make sure we get you on by the end of the fiscal podcast year. What did I just say? Did I say something? I don't know if any of those were words.
You can be a winner. So I'm working on a new show for TBS.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing a pilot.
Very
for
funny.
Yes. Kind of funny.
Well, that's their slogan.
Sometimes funny.
That should be
it's
their slogan.
It's someone else's funny, usually, right. What you were saying earlier.
What's your show?
It's called The Naked Truth. And it's a comedy panel show where it's I host it, and there's three comedians.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that we expose what's wrong with everything
in
the media culture, because there's no real journalists now calling people out on things. And there's just a flood of internet information and politicians and reality TV and all of this stuff. And there's no funnel to kind of weed out all of the BS.
I'm internet culture, and I just like to make harsh assertions on things with little to no information, but am positive that I'm right. I love to be indignant. I think that just makes me feel better about myself.
That with an anonymous. Yeah.
He's the internet.
Yeah. If you can be anonymous. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't want anyone to know who I am.
Right. Exactly.
I'm going to attack from behind this shield. I'm going to have, it's a turret, you see. I'm going to fire from my digital internet turret.
Right.
And for me, if I want to feel angry, I'll go to Huffington Post. And if I want to feel very angry, I go to Drudge Report. It's really where I go to, see how I want to feel. And who's telling me?
It makes you feel alive.
Yeah.
It reminds you that reminds you you're alive.
It's more of a what, and then click over to Drudge. What?
But I figured that comedians are the real truth seekers. And so to take everything, all that stuff, it's almost, I wanted to kind of replicate the experience of when you go on the internet and you flip it open. It's like first you hit the big news. And then you're distracted by this video. And then you get into some crummy entertainment news. And we just decipher it all. And the comedians are the little voice in your head kind of analyzing it and making fun of it.
Has the show premiered yet?
No.
What?
I'm just out here getting it rolling. We're starting to, we have the pilot in March.
So it'll be on next week.
It'll be on next week.
Is that how that works?
Yeah.
I don't know how television works.
That's what I'm...
Are you shooting the pilot or is the show picked up?
I'm shooting a pilot.
Okay.
Shooting a pilot. And
can our audience go to vote somewhere on that to make sure that that happens?
Sure.
Go to TBS.
Yeah, go to TBS and say we love
Tom Papa. I hope your show gets picked up.
It would be great.
I was always, I've certainly been aware. I mean, like now you and I know each other.
Yeah.
But I mean, like back into the 90s, I certainly was aware of you. And then our mutual friend, Jen Johnston,
right,
who was in House of a Thousand Corpses, said,
right,
and this was in like 2000, 2001, oh, you've got to see my friend Tom Papa. He's a comedian. He's great.
Right.
And, you know, I was like, oh my God, Tom. Yeah. Then, you know, and then our worlds just sort of.
Yeah, we kept bumping into each other.
And then Rob Zombie directed your hour special.
Yeah, my stand-up special.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, which was really great. We were trying to do it for a couple years, and I was really patient about it. Like, I hadn't released anything in like 5 years, 6 years. But when I was coming up, like, the guys who had comedy albums were real big stars. And just because the technology was out there, I wasn't like, I don't think I should crank out like my own album just because I can do it off of my phone. So I was just really patient with it. So anyway, like 2 years ago, I was thinking about doing it. Rob was going to do it. You know, we were working on Super Bisto at the time.
Yep.
And then it kind of fell apart, and I went and did some other TV stuff, and he went and did a film. And then I literally went to go interview him for the radio show that I do on XM. And he said, whatever happened to that special? I said, well, I'm doing it in 2 weeks. And he said, who's directing it? I said, nobody right now, but I can't wait any longer. I'm just going to do it. And he just took out his book. You know how Rob works. He just took out his book. He's like, I'm totally free. I'll do it. I'll come down to New York. Let's do it. I was like, all right, cool. And it was the same vision that we had for it 2 years ago. I want it to look like a film, like a really like classic kind of
like the old
films.
Like concert.
Yeah, like I feel
film.
Like the TV, like the Comedy Central specials they all start to look alike. They look like they're made for TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted this to look like a film, and Rob really, he pulled it off. He made it really look cool.
And you feel like you got the special that you wanted?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it really was, it was lit really cool. If I could have had different jokes, it might have been better, but the lighting was amazing.
Let's talk about that for a minute, and please forgive me for making it about myself, but I am a narcissistic comedian, but I'm about to shoot my first hour special in a couple of weeks, and I'm freaking out about it a little bit.
Right.
Oh, and you, but because you've already been through this before. You've done a couple specials.
Yeah.
And so I just, how did you feel leading up to your first one?
For all of them, I feel kind of anxious, but also I kind of pregnant with the material in a way. It's like, okay, it's time for this to go out.
You know? Okay.
I wasn't like scrambling like to try and fill it in a way. It's hard because...
Oh, that's an interesting approach.
I feel...
God damn it.
I feel like this always happens. If I have in my head that I have to do an hour and I'm out on the road, I will hit like 59 minutes, or I'll hit like exactly 60 minutes in 1 second. I just have that thing where I always just, it's like saying I'm going to do 20 push-ups, and you'll do 20 push-ups, and the last one's like, oh, 20. But if you said to yourself, I'm going to do 25 push-ups, that 25th one becomes what that 20
was. It's like your brain gives you the exact amount of energy that you need.
Exactly. And so the thing with the specials was the danger with waiting too long is that material always falls off the set. It falls off the tree, you know? I'm always at an hour. It's like, well, I've been doing this for 4 years since my last thing. Why is it still at an hour?
Why is it not 4 hours?
Because all their stuff is falling off as you're writing the new stuff, so it's always in this constant state of being in that space. But anyway, back to your original question, I think, you know, you're nervous, but you just, I also feel like, you know, I just got to get it out there. So let me just go. I know I can do it. I know it's going to be funny. Just put it out and try not to judge it.
Did you feel any sort of a tug between? I mean, it sounds like yours was pretty ready to go when you did your special. But did you feel any sort of a tug between? This has to be perfect, and just stop being precious about it and just fucking do it.
Yeah, 100%. And there's actually a couple things that are on the album that weren't on. It wasn't on Comedy Central, that were completely improvised that night, like that I just put out there.
Oh, great.
And I think that was a smart thing to do. Like one was totally improvised and one was kind of a written new joke that wasn't ready for the special, but I put it in anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the screwing around part that kept all the really prepared stuff alive. I think it changes the set. Yeah. If you could have even have like a couple minutes of something that's happening in the moment, it really helps.
But you've toured with Seinfeld a lot, and so when you're on the road with Seinfeld, you better be polished, right?
Yeah.
You can't really, and especially in theaters, you can't really screw around with the audience because then it's just too big of an environment.
But you're
pretty used to being like, all right, this is it. Let's be polished and focused.
Yeah, for sure. But there was this thing I did that's on the album where I said that I stopped the set and I said something like, this is really fun. This is a lot more fun than going to the opera. I had just been to the opera. And I said, singing's just weird anyway. Like, who was the first person to be like, watch this sound come out of my face? And then I just started singing on stage. I was like, oh! And it just started like really, and the crowd was responding, so I kept going with it. And like, you could do that kind of thing. I didn't need the audience, you know, I didn't need to play around with them, but I could play.
Yeah.
On stage,
so was that the new thing, or was that the thing you just ended up riffing on?
That was the thing I ended up riffing on.
That's great. It sounded flowed in completely.
Yeah, it was totally. Yeah. And you know, that's happened every time I have recorded. Like when I did the half hour specials, there's always something that shouldn't be on there that ends up on there, and then I'll even forget about it. I'll never do it again.
Yeah.
And I'm not one of those guys. It's like every set is different. I am pretty polished, but there are those little things that pop up, and I think they're just. You got to have fun with it. It's a special night, so just let it go.
And even if it's just the thing that gets cut out of the album or the special, I think it's for those people there. They'll feel just like it brings the room into the like the very now moment of it,
absolutely.
Where it's like that was for us.
Yeah,
who knows if that'll make it? But that was just a thing.
Or if it serves no other function, it keeps you feeling. This sounds gross. Keeps you feeling fresh.
It does.
Keeps you feeling fresh, and just the presentation of your material is a little more.
Alive, because now all of a sudden you've come out of your comfort zone in front of you know, 500,000 people, and you all of a sudden, you know, the adrenaline kicks in, and that changes things.
What did you learn? What was it? You must have learned a shitload from touring with Jerry. I mean, yeah. Like, I'm sure, you know, the first handful of times you're like, I'm gonna watch every one of his sets, and then after yeah. a while, it's like, okay, I've seen it. I can probably go back to the hotel now and rest. But like, what did you learn from him?
It's amazing because I don't go out as often with him, but we do still go out once in a while, and I always tell people, now we go out, it's like our golf weekend. It's like just to go out and hang, you know? But I'm still learning from him. It's insane.
Golf or stand-up?
golf. And he's just so... I can't tell you, every time I'm around the guy, I'm picking up something else. It's crazy. He's just so... He never stops growing, which is so insane. I mean, he started it when he was 21 years old. He's like 57 now or something.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Jeez. And he's just been, and he's not one of these guys that just gets his set and just kind of goes. He works his ass off and is constantly discovering and constantly, he'll call me after gigs and be like, this was awful. I went down in flames tonight at this corporate gig and start explaining like this set and where you think it went wrong. And I mean, he never stops.
Wow.
I mean, so he's in, so if
that's refreshing
that,
and upsetting at the same time. You're like, yeah. I'm never gonna get better.
I know, yeah. Exactly. It's definitely disheartening in one level because it's comforting because you're like, okay, so I'm not that bad if I'm awful.
Right.
He has his days of being awful.
Sure.
But then it also becomes unattainable. Like, wow, I guess this is never.
I'll never feel satisfied.
Line. Right. I'll never.
It's like being in the depths of Tartarus and having like the, yeah. the refreshing water just out of reach. Like, oh, it's all, yeah, every time I'm so close.
You'll never ever get it.
Why are you punishing me, brain?
But I think the I don't know. I mean, the biggest thing is just being a professional and really working at it. And I think that. And that could be said from Carlin, Chris Rock. It's just, you know, these guys work. They yeah. don't. It doesn't just happen. These guys really work really, really hard.
Oh, you really? I mean, it's so funny. You can, or at least I, you know, you can think you work hard as a comedian, and then you're around someone who really does, and you're like, years ago, I remember, hosting or opening, and Louis C.K. was on. Louis was on the show, and. We carpooled to the venue, and he said, I was playing music, and he goes, yeah, you know, Chris Rock always taught me, like, never don't listen to music on the way to the gig, because that's when you need to be, like, buttoning
yeah.
up
yeah,
your set. And I was like, oh, my God, I didn't even, wow, I'm dumb. Yeah. I didn't even think about it till I fucking got up on stage.
Yeah. I heard him say that once at a show. Like, he's just like, I don't listen to music before I go on. But, like, for me, it's like I kind of want to get into a place. Like, music will help me kind of get into a mood.
Get pumped up, yeah.
It's like on the way to a show recently, my friend just put on some, like, Belle and Sebastian. I was like, put on some fucking rock and roll real quick, just right. so I can fucking.
Would you listen
out.
To Maniac yeah. from the? It's a Maniac. Do you listen to that? Like, kind of get
floor.
A yeah.
Well, no, but Chris Rock said that to Louis, and Louis said it to you, and you say it to us, and there is that thing of, it's not that you're stupid; it's that there's only a handful of people that can give tips on this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you know, and Seinfeld was learning from Bill Cosby, and Cosby was. Learning from Will Rogers, and Will Rogers was learning from Isaac Newton.
And then Aristotle.
And Aristotle.
And then the guy who was like, whoa! was learning how to do the voice. But do you feel like everyone, I feel, you know, what the reason that I love to dig apart comedy and people's processes on the yeah. show so much is because, I mean, there certainly are a handful of maxims that feel like they're true, but ultimately everyone's process is a little bit different to get to the same place.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really true. I mean, there's definitely
write every day, don't write every day. Riff right. on stage, don't riff on stage.
Yeah, yeah, write stuff in your notebook, never hold a pen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
write with your face. What?
Yeah. Who says never hold a pen?
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, like, there's guys that say they never write their stuff
yeah,
down.
Yeah. I'll find it on stage.
Yeah. Yeah. Or they have the idea and then they just bring it up and yeah, I don't know. I mean, it is really kind of interesting. And, you know, I've been trying not to be so... I mean, being around Jerry, you kind of feel like, well, I should just do what he does because he's been so successful. But then you've got to free up and be yourself. And I'm trying not... You almost become superstitious about how you work in a way.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I only write out of this notebook or I only work out of this laptop. And then it's like, no, be free with it. You know, it's still supposed to be fun. You're supposed to be enjoying this. This is... We're making jokes. This is supposed to be a good time.
It still seems fun to you. How long have you been doing stand-up now?
I started in 93.
Okay.
So that makes
almost
it,
20 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
19.
Yeah, 19.
In World War II, the combat age.
June 12th, 1993. And it's fun. It should be fun. You know? It shouldn't be such. Shouldn't be like scowling and I gotta get these jokes right.
Oh, jokes! Oh, comedy!
God damn it.
Why? I'm gonna punch you. But you're good at, I really do, the you know, the more I do this and the older I get, the greater respect I have for clean comics, people who can really make comedy out of, and I don't know if I'll ever be that guy,
yeah,
but just who can make comedy out of, you know, just clean situations. I mean, I guess it's stylistically, it's just some people are good at it and some people are not, and you know, but yeah. I always respect that you can do that.
Yeah, I don't, you know, it's funny, I have this joke in my act that I'm doing now, and it's not even dirty, but it's talking about stress and like the world is whether the world is doing great or it's falling apart, as a human being, you always have stress. And it doesn't matter what's happening. So you have to do whatever cuts the edge off. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Some people like to drink. Some people like to talk, tickle strangers in public. I said, what I like to do, and I know it sounds weird, I like to put my balls on a marble countertop. Just something about standing up and not having to carry them for a brief moment. And that dark, cold marble is so refreshing. And that's like as dirty as I get.
Yeah.
And it feels like, oh, I'm being racist. Yeah. But you know what I mean? It's like there's a fun freedom to just not caring about being clean, for sure. But I think it has to just come from how you are.
Are you sure you don't want to open with 15 minutes of cum jokes? Or just to like take a nice, just to surprise the industry?
Yeah, just to kind of shock everybody.
Or just in the middle of a set, just go, oh, fuck! And then move on from it.
My God, did you see Tom Papa hosting the AVNs? He's fucking crazy.
Crazy.
I had this moment at the Laugh Factory where I'd worked all morning on what I was going to do that night, and you're waiting all day to try out this material and try it out. And it's like a, you know, one of those light nights, you know, like a Tuesday night or whatever. And I go up on stage, and this girl, this beautiful girl in the front row, as soon as I get up there, I'm like, hey, how's it going? Blah, blah, blah. And she goes, just so I could hear it, you're an asshole.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? And she goes, you're an asshole.
What the fuck?
And I was like, I don't even know you. And she was just this entitled, beautiful girl who was just like, I can say whatever I want. And I was so angry. And I tried to go into my material, and then it wasn't happening. Then I started resenting her, and she said something else. And I just snapped. And I go, you entitled, dumb twat.
That's with the Laugh Factory.
And I started, right, the Laugh Factory.
Well, you're lucky no one had that on a cell phone camera.
I know. And I started saying twat with such venom, and it was just like a rubber band.
Oh,
it was just twat.
Yeah.
And it just kept and hammered her and went off, and the crowd was into it, and she got humiliated, and I walked off and did my set and then got out of there. And I came upstairs, and the comics were like, that's the funniest we ever saw you.
Oh, jeez.
I was so angry and sweating and miserable and mad at myself for even going there. And they're like, that was the best we've ever seen.
Isn't that funny, though, how upsetting it can be? It's the same reason that Bill Hicks, that there's that famous internet clip where he spins out of control.
Montreal, yeah.
Right.
It's not because he's being heckled. It's because of the dismissive, just kind of like right away, like, you suck or you're an asshole. It's like, that's all you're gonna.
Right.
I haven't even done anything yet.
Right, exactly. This is just an ugly person.
And you just feel like you cannot let them get away with that and feel like that the way that they're living is okay.
Oh, it's the worst. Right. And she was so, you know, and you just, you're like, oh, I've seen you. I've met you. I know you. I went to school with you. I know what this is. And no.
Well, especially you. Like, there are certainly comics. I mean, like, I feel like I would totally get that on stage. Someone's like, you're an asshole. I'd be like, yeah, I was, you know, sure. I probably was aggressive in some of my material. But your material is so friendly and so like, hey, everyone.
You're a human smile.
It wasn't even material. It was just, hey,
you're an asshole.
How are you tonight?
But that's my favorite bit of yours, the hey, how are you tonight?
Right? Yeah.
Hey, how are you? Hey, how are you?
Oh, man. It was really, really awful.
But leave it up to a bunch of comics in the back of a room to be like, it's like, yeah, the way you got really fucked up on that girl was awesome.
Right. They were just like, that's the best you have ever been. And I'm driving home like shaking.
But isn't it funny now how long ago was that?
That was like 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay. So if you did that today at the Laugh Factory, someone would catch that with with their cell phone, put it online, and it could completely.
Yeah.
It wouldn't necessarily change the course of your career, but it would definitely be like, if people didn't respond well to it, it would be a dip in the road.
It would be a dip in the road, but with other audiences, it would be a bump in the road. It would raise you up.
Like Bill Burr, Bill Burr takes down that Philly crowd.
Yeah.
Like, that was a bump for Bill.
I think the only problem you have with people trying to capture something and going after you is if you are getting a paycheck from somebody. Tracy Morgan does not apologize and go to unless he wants those checks to come from NBC. If you're an unfettered comedian and you're just doing your thing, go ahead, record it, come after me, do whatever you want. I don't have to apologize for what I'm doing up here and how I'm working. It's only when you're being paid by somebody that you've got to, or you, it's at least in your decision process.
I've been really kind of wrestling with this idea lately that Joan and I were talking about this on the phone before that. The more it's a weird luxury problem, but the more people are aware of you just by virtue of the numbers of people.
Yeah.
Almost everything you say is going to offend one person somewhere because I feel like, comedy is, if you really stripped out the comedy elements of it, it's all horrible things that we're saying because that's how we deal with. That's just how we deal with horrible things.
Yeah, it's things that enrage you, really.
Or things that are awful that you're trying to gain power over or get a hold on. And so, sometimes I get frustrated with the audience because they'll be like, they'll be laughing at someone else's misfortune in a bit. But then, if it gets anywhere near them, they're like, hey, come on.
Right.
Be offended by everything or nothing.
I know, but it's very difficult. And I think we're in a time when it's so difficult because on a one-on-one, you used to just see the audience as a big mass and then you moved on and you never saw that audience again.
Right.
But now they can contact you and tweet to you and direct message you, and you now have to deal with them on a one-on-one basis. And you're right. I mean, I've done shows in a theater and then one guy will email me. I had this joke about twins, how with all this in vitro cloning going on, we have all of these creepy twins out now, and I said they're not like normal twins, which are creepy enough. These are like shifty and paranoid because they know they're not supposed to be here.
Yeah.
Some guy sent me a thing like, "All right, my beautiful daughter was born in vitro, and if it wasn't for that process, she never would have." And he's just like pouring his heart out. And it really kind of hit me. Like I felt bad for a second. I was like, "Dude, it's just a joke." But what other generation had to deal with that?
Yeah,
there were always people thinking it. There were always people in the audience that took umbrage with something that you said.
Sure,
but they couldn't call you up and say, "Excuse me,"
"Excuse me, I've tracked you down to tell you that I did." Yeah. You still do the joke though, right?
Of course.
I mean, it's a very slippery slope because once you start writing from a place of, "Oh, I don't want to offend that person. Oh, I don't want to offend that person. I don't want to offend that person." Then you get scared and your material becomes bland. You lose your edge, and then it's like then you're not saying anything anymore.
No,
exactly.
There's some obvious ones that you shouldn't say.
Yeah,
but the sort of like everyone's getting really territorial about like, nope, that offends me.
Right.
Like,
oh, yeah, but that offends them. What about the 100 other people around them who were laughing their asses off? And that's the people you should be concerned with. Yeah. The person who's not going to like you is going to have their own reasons and they're just not going to like you. Who cares? Yeah. You're not trying to win everybody over.
Right.
You're just trying to make the people laugh.
And I feel like I mean, it's not like I feel like I'm a super offensive comic that's trying to challenge the system.
Right.
But still,
you're honest. Yeah.
You joke about horrible things because horrible things terrify me. And it's like, that's what I need to express. I need to feel like I have some power over the horrible things.
Of
so
course.
I have to joke at it.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like, no one makes, like when a band gets together and starts playing songs, I think I've mentioned this before, they're not going, "Oh man, I hope everybody likes this song I'm about to make." They're hoping a lot of people do so they can make a living off of making music, but they're not like looking to like go into, Indonesia and go, "Why don't you like this punk song I wrote?"
Right.
You're just going to find the people that like it and you're going to embrace them. They're going to embrace you and you shouldn't have to worry about it.
I have a natural thing where I want everybody to like me.
Yeah.
Where I really have always been that way.
Me too.
Like, always really tried
it's
to
all
like,
of us,
want,
I think.
Was
that's the room.
Yeah.
That's all like of us.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I've been, yeah.
And that's,
I
remember makes it George, so challenging.
I remember George Carlin saying something like, if you get 30% of the audience to laugh at a joke, that's a very high percentage. And then I would stroll out into the theater with, 3,000 people watching Seinfeld. And you just walk out there and he's killing. But then you look at the faces and it's like there's groups of people that aren't laughing.
Yeah.
They're all really interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Well, think of it this way. When you were in high school, did you want everyone in high school to like you? Most of the people in my high school were pieces of shit.
I
liked making my friends
like
laugh,
me.
And right. Those were the guys I hung out with.
Right.
And so that made me feel good.
I want everyone to like me.
I tried to everybody.
I was
really?
A bad
And I was good at it.
Oh, I was bad at it.
You were bad at it?
I tried to be the class clown, and I was just like a fucking... Just a clown.
Oh, really?
You were good at it, too.
You were good at it, too?
I was good at it,
yeah, I had, like, the guys, they were getting high in shop, and I had, like, the cheerleaders, rich girls. I had them all.
I remember in seventh grade at recess, they would hang out in groups. Like, the Puerto Rican kids would hang out in one group. The Cambodian kids would hang out in another group. The cooler guys, whatever.
It's like every high school.
Yeah.
You went to school.
But anyway, it was recess. It was, like, seventh grade, and I said to my friends, like, watch this. I'm going to go make each of these groups laugh.
Really?
And I did at recess. I went into each group, and I fucking was like hanging out.
Yeah. What'd you say? Like dip my balls in it. The state style.
And that was and that was a weird thing that I still remember.
I think we have this idea, as you know, and maybe I mean I'm sure it's not just comedians because most people have that thing where they want other people to like them.
Sure.
But just to your point, you kind of get this idea in your head of like. It's a pass or fail, like 0 or 100%.
Uh-huh, right.
And then you start to realize, and then, at a certain point, you kind of go, well, it doesn't really have to be 100%, mm-hmm. I guess. I
mean, right.
30 is a much lower number than I would have guessed.
Yeah.
But I would say like, 60 or 70, you're doing all right.
I know.
I'm fine with going for the bronze. I'm fine with that.
But it's sort of like batting averages. It's like, you're not going to hit every time.
Right.
If you hit a... decent number of times.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I mean, that's about 30% is super successful.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. I remember a friend of mine saying to me, just not even performing-wise, just socially, some guys or some girl, I forget, had a problem with me for something, and it really bugged me. And my friend was like, dude, not everyone's going to like you. And that was news to me. I was like, I know, I can crack anybody, can't I? No.
Watch me.
Yeah, but you have a naturally very pleasant demeanor, and your face is kind of, you're almost always smiling.
Uh-huh.
And I'm almost always scowling. Like, I'm one of those people that when I walk down the street, it's like a homeless guy be like, hey, cheer up, brother. I'm like, don't tell me. I'm happy.
Right.
This is just how I look.
It's just my face.
My mouth turns down normally. And I don't appreciate it, you making fun of me.
I have a hard time smiling for pictures, though. I always feel like my face is being forced into a smile. I'm like, I think I have... kind of a smiley demeanor, but it's not a real smile. Like when I smile, it turns into like the Joker.
Oh, Tom, please. Stop.
Can you not look like a maniac for just one moment? Tom.
Why so serious, Tom?
What's wrong with you, fella? Cheer up, Charlie.
Forget about the demons for a second while I take the picture.
How much of your material, like, do you feel like there's stuff that, how much of it is just like, it's just comedy, I'm just fucking around? Or, like, it sounds like there's stuff that you really kind of want to pull out and express.
No, I think it's mostly that. I've kind of always been that way, where I start with, like, a dark feeling or a dark thing and lighten it up. It's all angst, and it's all stuff I'm really kind of feeling. I've actually been thinking lately of, I need to get some fun bits. Like, I need to lighten, I need something silly. Like, I loved watching Carlin, like, talk about, like, all this crazy stuff, and then he'll just be like, you ever see a crab walk like this? And he just walk across the stage. And it's like, I want more of those funny moments. I've been almost a little too into, like, like, I've been talking about, like, recession or death or, age, and I'm just like, lighten up a little bit, have some fun.
So now that your special's out, and you're gonna, when are you going back on the road?
I am like a month ago.
Oh, you're back on. Okay,
yeah,
so back out. How are you already workshopping? You must be already writing.
I shot the special. It just aired, but I shot it last April, end of April.
Oh, okay, so you had tons of time.
I've been out there, Yeah.
Well, that's nice. So when people come to see you, just have a whole bunch of new stuff ready to go.
A whole bunch. Yeah, like I just did the Wilbur Theater in Boston.
Oh, we're going
Saturday.
There in May.
May 4th.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's a great. Yeah.
God, it's a great place. It's such a great comedy town.
Yeah.
And so there were people that had just seen my special because it just came out. And they saw me afterwards and they said, we didn't even think about it. Like, we're like, oh, what if it's this just the special that he's going to do? And they're like, but it was so much new material. We were so, you know, happy. And I was like, well, yeah, you know, that's how good I am. And little do they know, I shot it almost a year ago.
Yeah, I realized that too. So I just wrote a bunch of new stuff today.
Yeah.
You were very kind. You and I had similar bits.
Yeah.
I had a bit about old sperm and young sperm and I think.
Yeah. And I had old sperm kids.
You had. Yeah. And you had never seen mine and I'd never seen yours. It's just like one of those things. But it's always a weird moment when you go, all right, so yours aired on your special, but I feel like I should probably at least call. Like, I should at least call Tom.
Yeah.
But then you feel like an asshole because then I sort of feel like he doesn't care. But then I'm just gonna be. And then it sounds like I'm making a thing out of it. And
yeah.
There are certainly some comics who say it almost like what they're really saying is, so you better stop doing yours.
Yeah.
You know.
But I think with all those things, with all those issues of material, you always consider the source. You know, and you calling me and being like, "Hey, I have this old sperm joke." It's like as soon as you said. That's why you were calling. Was like, just do it. It's just like, no, there's no chance in hell that you saw me do it or heard of me do it. There's none of that. So it was just like, just do it. We should. I don't corner the market on old sperm.
No, but don't. But don't you feel like
not
a little,
yet?
Yeah,
Tom Papa's old sperm cakes.
He's cornered the market on old sperm.
Old sperm, ladies and gentlemen.
They're chromosome-licious.
And try Moxie.
But no, whenever I do ask other people about it, it is like this weird, it's this thing of like, I didn't take this dollar from you.
Right.
You know,
why would you bring a dollar too?
It is like there is a little uncomfortable, but I really think it all comes down to that, like consider the source. Like the problem with doing my special a year earlier was I did this joke about my face.
Mm-hmm.
It was my mother's old and confused. Yeah. She calls it my face. And that came off of, it wasn't actually my mother. It was my wife's friend Susan's mother. And she just dropped it to me. And this was like 2 years ago that she said that this my face. And we were all at dinner and I went out that night and I made it into a joke. And it stuck and it kills. But since that time, it's been on The League. The League did a thing. Like I didn't see the episode, but I saw just a commercial for it. And like, someone said my face. And then... you know, other comics, I'm sure, have said my face since that point. But it was already like a dated reference by the time it came out. But when I wrote it, it was original. It was really from my life. But, you know, you can't do anything about that. There is the zeitgeist. There's something going that we all kind of gravitate and start doing certain things.
It's almost like there's this weird, like in the ionosphere.
Yeah.
There's this weird sort of like chatter sphere.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And stuff just gets in your head.
Yeah.
It gets in the social consciousness's head. And it is shocking how things that you think can be so specific, you see appear somewhere else in another town from another guy.
Yeah.
And
I mean, we're all listening and digesting all this information all the time.
And now because of the internet, it's like kind of level the playing field of stuff everyone can access.
Yeah.
There was a bit I had about sports, and I went to New York and saw this really funny comic, Max Silvestri, and he pretty much had the same bit.
Yeah,
and it was all just about trying, you know, talking about sports,
get
not knowing
points.
Anything. It's like I hope your favorite team wins the match, and they get all the points necessary to get to the big game. You know, right. And they're color coordinated. You know, is pleasing to your eye. Just all this kind of stuff where you're just saying everything about sports, but nothing really about sports.
Yeah,
and he had like almost the exact same thing,
wow.
And it rolled, and it just kind of meandered the same way. And I was just but. I had seen him do it.
Uh-huh.
He had never seen me do it,
right.
And so I was like, "Well, I saw him do it first in the scheme of things, so I'll back off."
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you want to be too precious about jokes, and you also feel like, well, if someone gets it on TV first, it's sort of like their joke, you know?
And I thought he had done it better, too. Like, mine really had no end. He had a punch at the end. I was like, well, that's better than I could have done it. Right. So, you know,
did you
kind of looks like me, too.
Did you develop in New York?
It's funny.
Was that where you developed?
Yeah, my first place was in New York, and it all came from New York. Yeah, and I was saying off air that I have a hard time with L.A. just because it just fits my rhythm. It fits my nature. The city, I'm so much more prolific when I'm in New York. I think it's just because that's where I started and where I came from. And I'm trying to free it up and be a little more open. Like, you know, Bill Burr and Daniel Tosh, they, you know, and yourself, it's all guys that have migrated to the West Coast and still crank out a lot of material. But I go at a slower rate when I'm out here for some reason.
It's the weather, man.
Nah, I think you were being kind by throwing me in the group with those guys, but I feel like I hadn't really written a lot of new stuff for a while just because of like trying to get all the Nerdist stuff going.
Uh-huh.
And it took away a lot of my going on the road and writing and touring and writing energy. And it wasn't until finding out in December that I was supposed that I'm shooting the special in February that like, oh my God, I really need to pull together like 25 minutes of new stuff and just get rid of a bunch of old stuff.
That's funny, because every time I see you, it seems like there's new stuff. Maybe it's because they're short sets.
That's probably what it is. that's probably what it is. No, but the exciting thing about finally is doing this special is, you know, like everything that dates back a couple years, I can finally gone, and I can start over.
Yeah.
And it's been really fun. The process has been really fun.
It's great. And where are you doing it?
In New York.
In New York?
Yeah.
Which, Skirball?
The Skirball, yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Really nice. Where'd you do yours?
I did my Union Square Theater.
Oh, nice.
Which is in Union Square.
What?
It's like an old, I wanted to feel like the paint was coming off a little bit.
Nice.
You know those older kind of things.
Did you do it independently and sell it to Comedy Central? Did they produce?
I started independently, and then as we were going through the process, they picked it up.
They did. Okay.
Yeah.
When you and Rob were talking about the look and feel of it, did you guys talk cameras or what kind of like equipment he was going to use?
A little bit. You know, I was talking. I don't understand all of that, so I was talking more of how I wanted it. Like, I didn't want the audience lit. I wanted things to be a little grainy. I wanted things to be colorful, but I wanted the focus to be just on me. Like, because when you go to a comedy show, it's you looking at the act, and you don't, like, when you laugh, you don't turn to the side and see the three people next to you and see what they're doing. So why would you shoot that?
Yeah, yeah. Reaction shots are always kind of odd, I felt, in comedy specials.
Yeah, it's always, just and there's always points. One out of the three that's not laughing, too.
I never understood that either. Even if you have to fucking fake it, get the audience to laugh before you shoot it.
I know. Yeah.
Just cut away for a second to like you. We have the ability to fake that.
Yeah,
on my episode of Live at Gotham, they did a cutaway to some guy cracking up like crazy, and I was just like, "There's no way he was laughing that hard to what I just said."
Right.
I know how good that is. It's not that good because this guy was like, "Yeah," like clap. Yeah.
It's just a guy in an edit room going, "Give me a laugh on that."
Yeah, yeah. And find someone from another episode.
Yeah.
Did you edit the special? Did Rob edit it?
I did. I edited it with this girl, and then Rob took a look at it, but he was already making his next movie, so.
That guy's work ethic is ridiculous.
I know. He's one of those guys where you feel a little more depressed about yourself.
I'm depressed thinking about it, and I don't even.
It's amazing. He has this schedule where it's like write a movie, shoot a movie, edit a movie, write an album, record an album, tour, and then back to write a movie, shoot a movie.
Like, that's breaking down even just to the day, like what it takes to on the daily basis. He's up at like 5 a.m. working out, starting to write before anyone wakes up.
God,
he loves to write before anyone wakes up. He's like, it's quiet.
Yeah,
no one bothers me.
I guess if we were writing spooky jokes, that would be the time for us to do it.
Right. Daylight kills my process.
I'm gonna start my career all over and just be a spooky joke comedian.
There hasn't been one, has there?
I don't know.
Like a dark, scary.
You
know,
yeah. Like Glenn Danzig did stand up comedy.
This isn't anything that I would ever do, but lately I have so had this weird urge to dress up like a Camelot wizard and go on stage and just tell wizard jokes. Like, I want to do that so bad. Yeah. It would just be a weird detour that, you know, like maybe that's something I could do at Meltdown one night. But
I'll say that's just something you could get a 10 minutes of jokes and then do it at like Comic-Con in front of a crowd that's going to go ape shit. And then just it's a video online. That's
a
funny video.
Podcast, you go up in between me and Jonah.
Oh, that's a good idea.
But then I have to special drop.
Then I have to travel with a wizard outfit.
Well, yeah. Well, you don't have to commit to it for the rest of your career.
I'm going through TSA. I'm like, oh, that's my phoenix feather wand. Don't ruffle my moon robes.
I like how in your fantasy you do it once and now you're a slave to it for the rest of your career. It just blew up.
You know why? Because I fear it would be better than anything I write as myself. And then I'd be like, oh, now I have to be Morlock.
I think about that all the time. Like Larry the Cable Guy. He was a good comic, apparently. Just do it. What's his real name?
Dan something?
Dan Whitney or something.
Dick Whitman.
And then his character took off. And, you know.
What are you going to do? Not take $20 million a year?
Yeah. And then he was like, people really responded to it. And you got more traction than you did when he was just himself telling the jokes. And there's something very interesting in it. Like, a lot of. Like rap acts have alter egos, right? Like Eminem does, and all these different people. And there is something kind of cool about that. Like,
yeah,
Chris Gaines and Garth Brooks. It's almost like within
Gaffigan's act, like he's playing two characters, really.
Oh yeah,
right.
Yeah,
I mean, he has that. There is something interesting to giving the audience a different side of you. Not to the extent of dressing up in a wizard robe, but there is some. You know what I mean?
Well, it's also. I mean, I've always felt. I just talked about this on Kelly Carlin, George's daughter, has a radio show on XM now.
Oh yeah,
and I did it, and we talked about comedy, and I said I always wanted to be one of those weird like emo Phillips or like someone who is an exaggerated character on stage, because I felt like it just gives you a better frame of reference to write from, you know, because it's just more. Now, I'm not saying he's one-dimensional, but you know, you just sort of pick a weird character, and it's just easier to write from that point of view because you don't know who you are yet.
Right.
And it just gives you – it's just a little bit easier to come from, but then you're stuck in it.
But then don't you think that at this point in your career, you kind of know who you are comedically?
Well, that's the thing. You start to – I mean, like you start to figure that stuff out as you get older.
And then it becomes easier to write for yourself.
Exactly. Right. But I always – you know, I so wanted to be like a weird, surreal
– Yeah.
Because then you don't even really – you can get away with writing some jokes, but then if you just say weird things and people fill in the blanks in their head and they're like, oh, he's so weird.
I kind of feel like that way with Twitter. It's like I can be a lot more absurdist in my, because I do have that streak, but it doesn't transfer onto stage with me. But I feel like on Twitter I can put out some of the bizarre stuff that I always think about in my head as a joke but can't actually
There's
bring
no
up
room,
there.
Yeah.
You know? I'm a... Not that people are laughing at it, but it gives me a place to do it. And I don't have to wait for the wizard robe to come around at baggage claim.
Yeah, the most you can hope for in like a good Twitter joke is someone looking at their phone going, that's killing in Twitter.
<You're right>.
To be in Iowa City and my wizard robe gets lost in transit.
You have to make one out of cardboard.
I have a show in 2 hours. I need a wizard robe. Yeah. Where do I go?
Where's the costume shop?
Through that door, boy.
Tap the stones.
Follow me to my house. To the basement. Yeah.
Can I interest you in any spells while you're here?
Welcome to Moronic Alley. You have kids, Tom.
I do.
How many kids do you have?
Two of them.
How old are they now?
9 and 20. 6.
Which one's your favorite?
Oh, they're all the same.
No. I don't believe it.
It depends. It depends on the week.
That's actually really mean of you to say they're all the same. So they're just one unit.
They have no individuality.
No, it really is like a race to the finish. It's ongoing. Like, for someone will get the crown and run with it for a couple months, and then the other one comes back strong, and they take
drop,
off.
They drop the ball.
How is it touring? I mean, like, did having kids kind of slow down your schedule for a while, or is it just sort of like with your wife where you're like, you know what you married into?
Yeah. She was a comic also. She started as a comedian too, so she understood. And it never slowed down because of that. I think it's kind of healthy. I don't think it's healthy to be in a house every night for the rest of your life together. I really don't.
Yeah.
I know. I think there's good breaks, and everyone's can be themselves and grow as individuals. And I don't go for long periods of a time. But I didn't even before kids. I found the road very lonely. I couldn't go like 1 week and then go directly to another club. I always had to come home because I found it depressing. I'd be like start out writing material, and by the end of it, I'd be writing poetry.
Yeah, I've a lot of my friends are starting to go out like just be road guys regularly, and they come back different. They come back to town, and it's a little different hanging out with them because they're just kind of like, let's go to the bar again. And it's just like this guy, they're just kind of constantly needed to be moving or doing something, and they're just like, I'm back, let's hang out.
Yeah.
You know?
What did you do to sort of, I mean, because you don't strike
me
as like...
Kyle Kinane.
Let's go and get some wings.
Well, that's a good one. That's a good Kyle Kinane. It's a really good Kyle Kinane. How did you sort of squash the, because you don't strike me as like, I'm a huge boozer. Like, you seem like a pretty well-adjusted guy.
He doesn't? So. That's weird. I got that from him.
Really? That's why he's happy all the time.
You understand me.
So how did you, you know, like when you're on the road, it's like, you know, it's Friday night and you're in the middle of your comedy week. You still have, you know, three more shows to do, and you go back to your hotel and you're just like empty and kind of sad. Like, what do you do?
I always found that the drinking part of it, and I do like to drink, but I found it so difficult to maintain to be yourself and maintain energy. By the time you fly in, do radio and TV to promote the show that early first day that you're there, then go and do the two shows at night, and then wake up the next day and do another 2 hours. It's just, for me, it was like adding anything on top of that would make it so difficult. It was so hard just doing that straight and drinking a lot of water to feel good enough to really do a good show. So then if I would like be with a buddy and then we would drink and you go home at 2-3 in the morning, my whole next night sets were messed up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I never really did it. And I got to the point where I just put so much energy into the shows that even one drink just to wind down, I just want to go back and pass out. I'm done. By the end of those two shows, I really, when I get in that hotel room, especially now having a family, when I get into that hotel room and the door closes and I'm by myself again and can just sit there, I'm so happy.
Stillness.
Really?
Yeah.
So much energy goes into the shows. I don't understand the guys that have the energy to go rage and then
I don't know. I mean, I've been sober so long now that I was never drinking and on the road.
Yeah.
But I What's probably would have died.
What's your vice now? Like, do you have something?
Yeah, working is kind of my vice, weirdly. Yeah. Working is my vice that kind of keeps the chatter in my head down. And the, boy, these goddamn, these chai lattes at Starbucks. I know it sounds like, all right, come on, really? White people problems? But like... Every chai latte is like a fucking candy bar. It's just like,
what isn't a chai latte?
It's just breast milk. It's
really
like
good.
It's sugary, it's really milk. Good. They squirt this
sugar and milk.
They squirt this chai syrup and then just steam milk around it, and it is so delicious.
But chai's tea, isn't it?
It is a tea, but at Starbucks they condense it down into a syrup, and so you just get this like sugary pulp.
Have you ever tried like a Earl Grey latte?
Yes, I have, and it's just not the same.
Have you ever tried a chai tea latte?
So comforting.
Oh, I love it.
Is it caffeine filled too?
By the way, I breastfed until I was 17. Did I mention that?
That's a lot of caffeine in a chai latte.
There's not as much as coffee.
I thought there was a ton.
No, there is, but there's just not as much as coffee.
Do you ever get them dirty? Do you ever get them with a shot of espresso?
Oh, like right in the ass?
Yeah.
just like Fleetwood Mac used to do, it just kind of gets it into your system faster. They just blow the chai into your ass.
Chai latte shake, that's something that I get bummed out thinking exists.
Oh,
and
really?
I know where to get it, and I don't want to know,
because
as an adult, I can do it whenever I want.
If I could only have one warm beverage for the rest of my life, it would be a spiced chai tea latte from Nordstrom's.
Really?
Oh, you love the ones at the Nordstrom.
I feel like I'm with like my friend's older brothers, like teaching me about weed for the first time.
or are you with your friend's older grandmothers who are talking about where to get good tea?
You know where you can get a fucking great chai latte.
My vice is tea and quilting beads. Oh.
Food is my thing though, like because you know I smoked pot for years.
You?
Oh yeah, like from end of high school to. Through off like a couple years after college, and I smoked a lot of weed, and then You know, I never really drank that much because I always felt crummy the next day. I would just drink like a normal person. Yeah. But I do have that that thing. Like you want to, you can't just be.
Yeah, you got to disconnect.
I find like food, I could really, if I didn't have any TV gigs or anything, I would be really, really fat.
Yeah, tell me about it.
So, being on
a TV show,
on camera and like in the vanity of like looking
completely.
Good. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's the only thing that makes me lose weight.
That's the thing that keeps me from drinking like tons of beer all the time. I was like, I can't.
Yeah.
It's just the vanity. The vanity of like, I don't want right. to.
Oh, I was at the gym.
You can see it too.
I was at the gym last night, like crazy. Like I would lose 20 pounds before 4 o'clock today, and it didn't happen. And I looked the same.
Well, you shouldn't feel bad about yourself. No one could do that unless you cut off an arm. Then
I was doing a gadget on Attack of the Show on G4, and I was just like, they put me in this green tight sweater, and I was like,
We always feel awful about ourselves. It's like anything with a waistband just makes. It doesn't matter how skinny you are, you just feel cruddy.
And then the guys in the booth were keying out the sweater and like. Doing fun things with my torso.
But you came wearing a green sweater?
No, that's what wardrobe put me in.
Oh.
And then
he came. But you know what? I was watching It's a Mad, 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 Mad World the other day, which is the greatest comedy film of all time. And it's, you know, it's Buddy Hackett and it's Phil Silvers and all these classic guys, Jonathan Winters and the Three Stooges. And you look at all these guys. First of all, they were all over 40. Mm. And they all look like
over
oddballs.
Over 50?
Over 50, yeah. And they just like oddballs and funny faces and fat. And the reality is, the weirder we look, the better it is. So whenever I'm like eyeing down like a big thing of kettle chips, I'm like, I'm a comedian.
There's that story I think that Patton had on like his first or second record where he was at some like banquet and no one's touching all this amazing food and cheese. And he's just like, I don't know, I'm trying to lose weight. I can't really do this. And then he just sees Brian Dennehy like just like scarfing down food. Oh, really? He's like, he looks over at Patton also. He's all, character actors, huh? We don't give a shit.
Oh, really?
No one cares if we're fat.
No one cares if we're
That's
fat.
That's great.
Yeah,
there is that thing. And I brought it up too. I was with Seinfeld this weekend, and he's always in shape, and he's always working hard to stay in shape. And I told him my new Mad, 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 Mad World theory. He got so pissed off, he texted me like 2 days later. He's like, but it's better to feel good. Skinny guys are funny too.
It's also like, you know.
He did. Go ahead.
No, Galifianakis was even saying, he's like, I became a superstar after I got fat. It's like he was just like it's like right. Once he like gained a bunch of weight, everyone's like, put him in stuff.
Yeah, then all of a sudden you can do something with him.
What were you gonna say, Tom?
I was gonna say this weekend when I was with him, went back to the material thing and, you know, consider the source and we all write about the same stuff. I have this joke in my act and he said it's about I thought I was gonna be like my father. I said there's no real fathers anymore. There's no respect for fathers. I figured I would be like my dad. Like I'd be the king of the castle. I would make people and rule them. And he told me on the flight in, he said, I've been working on this joke that I took from an old joke of mine from the 70s, and it's about making people, and it's going to sound like I'm stepping on your joke. I don't want you to stop doing it, but I found the file of that joke. I found that
just to show you that it was backdated.
Yeah, so he said I literally brought the sheet. Because he saves all his jokes from the beginning, like in those folders, those accordion folders.
Oh, my God.
He saves them all alphabetically by subject.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Like, you know, have you seen his website?
Yeah, that's it's an awesome
website. JerrySeinfeld.com is crazy. It's like every day he went through all his material, all his TV shots. So you go on the site and it rotates 3 shots each day.
Yeah, and he doesn't keep them on. Yeah, like you can't find them elsewhere.
Yeah, so they rotate. They're there for that day.
It's
and
great.
Then the next 24 hours it changes. But when he was putting it together, he was able to go through all of his sets and stuff because he has everything cataloged from his TV sets to the material. So we went into this accordion folder and pulled out, and I said to him, this is kind of psychotic. He still writes on the same exact yellow legal pad that he writes on right now.
Whoa.
And the handwriting is similar. I mean, it's all like, so anyway, he pulls the sheet out and we're on the road, we're backstage, and he says, oh, here's the joke. And it said, you know, something, it was similar. It was like something about you talk to fathers and they're like, we make people. And it's like, you can't, how do you talk to a guy like that or something like that? but he literally had the joke from the 70s intact on that sheet.
That's like the guy who has the wand shop.
in Harry Potter where it's like, oh yes, I remember this thing from 100 years ago, and he goes right to the file and right, pulls it out.
Yeah.
Like that's he knew exactly where that joke was in his lifespan and yeah. where it would be located. That's fucking incredible.
It's like,
it
is incredible. It's like when Rob reorganizes his record collection high fidelity autobiographically.
Yeah.
He's like, if I don't remember Rumors, I gotta know that I bought it for a girl and then didn't give it to her for personal reasons. Sort of
right. In the June 1983 pile.
Yeah.
Is it what do you say to maybe you don't have to answer this, but what do you say to Jerry Seinfeld if you get off stage, you guys are hanging out after the show, and he goes, hey, Tom, I got this tag for you there after that one joke, and you're okay, Jerry, hit me with it. And he tells it to you, and inside you go, oh, that's not good. Uh-huh. But you don't want to offend him. But so do you do it or do you not do it?
Here's how I handle it, because it's a very good question, because it happens a lot. And I try it at least once.
Yep.
Because he can sometimes see things that you don't see, but he's also not flawless, so there's sometimes when it doesn't work. But he literally changed, and the first time I ever worked with him on the road, he changed something. I said, what? It was something about talking during sex. And, it was, what do I have to say? My wife wants me to talk during sex. What am I going to say? And he changed it to, what do I have to say? And I was like, what? He's like, change it to have, rather than. And I was like, that's dumb, but all right, Seinfeld's telling me something. So I went up and I did it, and the laugh bumped up probably 30%.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I was like, oh, man, this guy. So he'll throw me lines, and I'll try them at least once, even if I don't see it. Most of the time, if I instinctually don't think it's going to work, it won't work. But sometimes it still does, you know? You got to try it. It's like, you know, you don't turn down Bill Cosby. You try the joke.
He probably knows what he's talking about.
We had this one night when a flight got derailed and...
Well, that was the problem, is they were trying to run a plane on the tracks where a train should be.
We're showbiz folk. We don't understand how these things work. So we were stuck someplace and we were just up at night and he said, I had this joke and he's like, let's work on that joke of yours. And he took out a pen and paper and we started writing it, and we're like going back and forth, and we're laughing, and it's like, oh man, we really nailed it. It was like an hour of working on this joke and writing, and he's writing it, and he hands it to me, and we're so into it. But it was one of those times when you think it's so funny in the room, and then you try it, and it just didn't go.
Yep.
I was like, oh, I thought I had like a classic bit hand delivered by Jerry, and then it never went anywhere.
And what did he think? Did he understand why it didn't go, or was he like, he didn't do it? Like
I think quietly he was just disappointed. Like, I think he thought, like, you really didn't try it. But you know what's really fun on the other side of it is giving him a line that works and having that get into the act, and it becomes like this big part of his act. That's such a gratifying thing. Like, if you've ever written for somebody, it's such an exciting thing. Like,
yeah.
The first time I ever sent in a joke to Weekend Update and saw Colin Quinn do it, I was, like, in Florida, one of my first road gigs, and I saw him say my words to television land. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
And that feeling never really goes away. So like if I give Jerry a line and it ends up in his act, I'm still very excited every time.
How long were you hanging out until you the first time you gave him a tag or a joke or anything like that?
Pretty quickly.
Yeah,
pretty quickly, because you know, you just hear things and you're like,
yeah,
just kind of throw them out.
That's a guy who loves comedy, like a guy who would sit down with his opening act and go, let's work that bit out. That's a guy who just needs to communicate in the language of comedy.
It does not stop. Back to like feeling bad like about Rob Zombie's work ethic, it's the same thing with Jerry. It's like, I'm not thinking about comedy and as much as I should be. Like, he doesn't turn his comedy head off. You know, like, yep. I'll be like, I'm not going to think about comedy today. I'm just going to have fun. He does not shut off. There's nothing in his brain that's like, no, we would get on flights and start working on jokes. We'd wake up and start talking about comedy. He never, it's really pretty great. I mean, that really is probably, other than just work really hard, is the pride in being a comic is what he gave me. Because he sees comedy as the most creative force in show business, whether it's respected as much as a movie or any of that. He just sees it as complete daring and complete artistry for guys that can do it and go out and make it work and has such respect and holds it in so much higher regard than actors or musicians or anything. And he makes you feel so great about being a comic. Like, anytime I start feeling bad about myself or what I've been on the road or whatever, and I just have a conversation with him, it's like going to therapy or going to a chiropractor. You come out of that session like, all right, I'm doing the right thing. I'm in the right business.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I wish I had a Seinfeld to hang out with.
It's pretty great.
You do.
He's under your chair.
Your own personal Seinfeld.
The new Seinfeld app.
It is a great thing. I mean, no joke, because, you know, you get in your own head and you just things get kind of weird.
Yeah, it's almost dangerous to spend too much time with yourself.
Because
there's no... you cannot properly balance you.
No.
And so you start thinking in weird circles, and then you're like, yeah, you're right, brain. Yeah, you're right. Should have a castle. Yeah. Everyone's fucking me. Yeah.
I read this thing that I think it was Deepak. How do you say it? Deepak Chopra?
Deepak Shakur?
Yeah. One of his books. He said, all you have to do is realize that your brain is just like a computer, and it's constantly evaluating and doing all this stuff. And all you have to do is be conscious of that your brain is up to its tricks again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, those days when you're just like, oh, man, this sucks, and, like, no one's hiring me, and why aren't I on that show, and that other guy got that thing? Mm-hmm. And just, if you can just...
This is like, what I do.
Hey, look at what my brain's doing. It's going off again. It kind of calms everything down.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There's times where you work yourself up, and then you just gotta stop and go, "Oh, fuck yourself, brain." Don't do that to me. I was in a good mood.
You crazy rascal.
Yeah, you crazy. Why are you trying to destroy me?
Leave me alone, brain.
Well, Tom Papa, we're at the end of our hour.
Wow.
What do you have anything you want to promote or have people?
Yeah,
look at?
I want people to go on iTunes and download Tom Papa Live in New York City.
Please download Tom Papa
work.
Live
it's
in a good New album. York City.
Thank you.
Just pounding all the way through. It's great.
Thank you very much. It's my proudest work.
And you're at Tom Papa on Twitter?
Yes. You can follow me on Twitter.
P-A-P-A?
P-A-P-A.
Is that short for like, well, when the relatives came over from our,
no.
It was Papakowski.
It's from Italy. It's from Sicily.
Papa.
It means Pope. It means the Pope.
Tom Pope.
A lot of Greek fans think I'm Greek and it was shortened like Papadopoulos or Papakanakanak. And I once had a guy, a driver.
That's a Greek Canadian.
A Greek guy. Was holding my name. He was the driver, and he's holding up Papa. And he says, "You're Greek. You're Greek." And I said, "No, it's Italian." He goes, "No, no, no. You're Greek." And we get in my car, and he's driving away. And he's like, "So you are Greek?" I said, "No, I'm telling you, it's from Italy. It means the Pope." He goes, "I know, but you are Greek." And he said, "Where in Italy?" I said, "Sicily." He said, we had it first. You are Greek.
He made it work for himself.
Right. It's like, well, we go all the way back. We're all the same.
You are Greek. I am
actually you're Pangean.
From Italy.
Yes, yes, I knew it. You're Pangean, I can see.
Everybody.
How long have you been doing this?
What?
Podcast.
The podcast?
Yeah.
This Sunday will be 2 years.
2 years.
Two years.
Technically,
wow.
February 7th is 2 years.
Congratulations.
Yeah, but I don't, you know, someone said.
I go by the Super Bowl.
So I go by the Super Bowl, too. I think the Super Bowl is a fun. I know. Yeah, someone was like, Super Bowl's not an anniversary. And I go, yeah, I know, but it's more fun for me to have the date, the birthday be the Super Bowl Sunday than the actual fucking date.
Yeah,
right. Because I couldn't give a shit about the Super Bowl.
I thought it was April. I thought it was the 7th.
That's all right.
There, I just don't.
Anyway, to answer your question, roughly 2 years.
Well, it's great. This is really a good thing.
It's been fun.
Yeah.
Really, it's still fun. I mean,
tell that Seinfeld guy of yours.
Yeah.
Chris needs to borrow them.
I just
like
want to. Can I borrow your Jerry? Can I borrow a cup of Jerry?
Here's what I will do.
I'll borrow a cup of
Anytime
Jerry.
Anytime you have a question and you want me to bring it to the mountain, I will bring it and I will come back to you with the answer.
Is the answer, can we get Jerry on the podcast? The answer is no.
Probably not.
No. Well, it's nice having you. See you later.
But he called me today to tell me he had a message for two comedians, and that he doesn't have contact with it. He saw it and thought it were really funny. He's like, but tell him this. I was like, all right.
So you're Mercury now.
Yeah.
You're a messenger of the gods.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's great.
But this is great. Thanks for bringing me in. This came because when you called me about our sperm joke.
Yes.
And I was like, I'd love to do your show. And you said, call me. And I said, called you. And you said.
And it all worked out.
Guys, it totally worked out.
Be here.
America.
That's what,
America.
Great. Special. That's why we're number one.
Hey.
We get stuff done.
Yep. Number one.
Always.
In everything but free press. Now we've dropped to number 27.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of a bummer.
And our economy's not that great.
Well.
Stop talking.
La, na, 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 na. America.
Enjoy your burrito, everybody.
Especially America.
Enjoy your American burrito.
Sounds like a sex act
now. Refried beans and cheddar cheese.
American burritos when you poop in the vagina.
Mm. Oh.
Filled with freedom.
Nah, you probably don't
filled
want to
with freedom.
Freedom to poop where I feel like. Wow, we managed to stay so highbrow for so much of the episode, and then right at the end, kablam.
Smash-o.
My fault. Sorry, Jerry.
You know, for your vagina poop bit, you really should say...
You never lead with the vagina bit.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Nerdist for a $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale and $55 of free postage. That's Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist.